Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real people talk about real events in the data networking industry. This is the Packet Pushers Media Markup Show, a show where we gather some people from the technology media, sit around the virtual workbench and look back at the events of the week with a beady media eye. We'll take a closer look at what's been happening and discuss things in a little bit more detail. And let's welcome to the show this week, Mike Fratto. Welcome back, Mike. How you been?
Hey, Greg, how are you? Doing well.
Doing well, yeah. Where are you from? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Syracuse, New York. I'm an editor of Network Computing. Been working for Network Computing, I don't know, for the last 15 years or so.
And also returning this week is Seamus McGillicuddy. Welcome back, Seamus.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. My name's Seamus. I'm director of news and features for TechTarget's Networking Media.
Right. Is that more than one site? So that's not just searchnetworking.com, that's a couple of others?
Yeah, I manage news for our unified communications site. We have a site devoted to wide area networks, another site devoted to information for people, for engineers in service provider industry, and a few other sites.
So there's a few. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. I think we've been nice to each other enough. Let's move on with the show. I guess the big news this week has been the Juniper's Q Fabric announcement. Which has been positioning itself as a real technological leadership. One of the things that's becoming clearer to me is that it's not a multipath solution, such as the other vendors have been promoting, either based around Trill or SPB, or proprietary versions of it, such as Cisco's Fabric Path or Strategies. It's actually a controller-based network. Have you guys looked much into this? Have you got any inside information as to how it looks?
I mean, all I did was follow the webcast. I listened to the webcast because the video feed was terrible. But I definitely saw the correlation between what you originally wrote on your blog about the concept of controller-based networking, what they actually delivered. I mean, the thing that struck me was that they're not so much delivering a new network for the data center, but basically just abstracting a gigantic switch out into the data center with multiple edge devices and a core device and a controller device, as you mentioned. But they've sort of abandoned Ethernet inside the network. They're only using Ethernet at the top of the rack to communicate with servers and storage. So it's definitely a different approach than what I've seen.
Yeah, it could be potentially quite radical. Mike, have you got any inside information on how it works, or are you like all of us at the webcast?
Well, I talked to Juniper after the webcast. It didn't get a whole lot of information outside of that. Juniper tends to be really tight-lipped about their product plans. So it's not, I guess I don't see it as a controller-based solution. I mean, because the way that Avner Gemina described it to me, the top-of-rack switches do the central processing, or do the processing for forwarding, routing decisions, and all that good stuff. And the interconnect, which will be shipping in Q3, is really just it's a backplane. You know, so it's going to have very limited intelligence as far as forwarding goes. It basically keeps track of switches and ports and that kind of stuff. Hmm. And you know what I found interesting, and this was kind of a little tease that I want to sort of dive into more, is he had said, I had asked him, I said, do you mean each top of rack switch, has its picture of the network like a top of rack switch now does, with layer 2, layer 3. Exchanging, the routing protocols. And he said, no, he said, each switch participates in the control plane, it's distributed, which I think is kind of interesting. So that's about all I know.
I haven't been able to find time to talk to Juniper to get an inside briefing. I was offered one, but unfortunately the time frame didn't work out for me. But if it is controller-based networking, the best way I can describe it is approximately similar to what a root reflector does in a root server does in BGP, that they use inside of the links interconnect, the internet exchanges, where the root server doesn't run true BGP. It actually has a program behind it that says, oh, I'm going to send you this information about what your forwarding table should look like, and you're this router over here, so I'll send you information about what your forwarding table should look like. And all the routers have a different view of the network. They're using BGP as a communication protocol, not as a, but the actual decision making about what the forwarding table should look like is done in a program. Now, the fundamental premise behind controller-based network is that in somewhere in the switching plane today, we have spanning tree making the decisions. And every switch gets the spanning tree information in from other switches, and that information says this is the way there, this is the way there, this is where the, you know, and the CAM table is built along the spanning tree protocol, fields into the CAM table and says this is where you need to go. Which is fine, but every switch needs to have a spanning tree table, and it doesn't allow for dynamic changes. So if you can imagine in a big cloud-based network, there will be situations where you say, this is my route from this destination to this destination. Hang on, I've already got 30 gigabits per second of traffic going in that direction. What I really need to do is bring another path in and to shed load. I need to move my loads dynamically around. So instead of switching that data by switch 3, 5 to 1, I'm going to send that by 3, 2, 1, 3 because the load is oversubscribing that backplane. And that's the exciting part about controller-based networking, is that there's something got a coherent overview of the entire data center network that can distribute information to all of the control, all of the forwarding planes, such that it dynamically adapts around changes, you know, failures, new systems. It almost, in a sense, will look like the FDDI backplanes of the time gone by, when we used to just unplug FDDI and plug everything back in, and we didn't need to take it down because it could just dynamically route around the changes in the system. Does that make sense?
Right.
Now, that said, does that coherent with what you saw out of the webcast, Mike?
No.
No.
No. But that could be what they're in fact doing. Something obviously has to make that route decision, or that forwarding decision, somewhere. Yeah.
Just Trill and SPB do the same thing, of course.
Yeah, but the indication I got was that it was distributed processing, and basically take a chassis switch. In fact, this is the metaphor that Abner used. Take a chassis switch, and basically the top of rack switch is a line card. The interconnect device is the backplane. And then the fiber cables are the I/O between them.
And they also have that x86 based QF director box that they're talking about as well, which delivers like management services. And I think that is involved in the distributed model that you're talking about with the top of rack devices. I think that sort of coordinates the distributed processing.
So yeah, it could be.
Maybe they're doing a centralized provisioning strategy then.
Yeah.
Where they actually have a centralized box which says this is where you can configure them all, and then it goes and downloads the configurations into all the boxes. So they are still distributed, managed, like a single management plane, distributed control planes, distributed forwarding plane. Now, the other thing that they must be doing is what similar to what Cisco's doing with their NX7000 and the FEX, which is fabric extensions. The premise behind fabric extension is where there's a silicon chip in the back of every switch, which is a what they call the switching fabric. Now, in the old days, the only way the fabric could connect to anything was to the line cards in a chassis. And what Cisco's been doing with the FEX is saying, well, if you connect enough 10 gigabits out to another switch, you've actually effectively extended the slot on the switch out to this other device. And I think, or I speculate, that what Juniper's doing is saying we don't need a core switching fabric. We can just route any to any to get around that.
I see what you're saying. They're definitely doing something somewhat similar to what Cisco did with those Nexus 2000 fabric extender boxes, but it seems like the reverse, where those fabric extenders are basically sort of taking the intelligence from the Nexus 7000 or 5000, bringing it to the rack, whereas with Juniper, the intelligence lives at the rack and sort of feeds information into the core, to be very simple. And
I don't think they've done a very good job, Matt, on the presentation because all it did was leave me unfulfilled.
Well, I think you have high expectations.
As a lot of Cisco folks were pointing out, and rightly so, you know, I mean, who knows what it's going to be until it ships?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a certain logic to that. I mean, one point I like to make is that as a customer, you've got to differentiate Cisco and Juniper into two different product sets, right? And if everybody's selling big fat switches like the Nexus 7, you know, if everybody's selling a big switch in the core, and then you sprinkle lots of little flowers around it to make a complete garden of switches, then there's nothing differentiating Juniper and Cisco. Whereas this approach radically differentiates their strategy for a different approach, which is
absolutely. So, on a related question, is it just me, or is the battle over the data center network oddly not between Cisco and HP, which HP is the number two switch vendor in the data center, but it's really becoming it's Cisco against Juniper, which has like less than 3% market penetration? Because this is all I'm hearing is Cisco versus Juniper, and it's a head scratcher. Not that Juniper's bad, but head scratcher.
Well, yeah, I agree. I feel like in terms of how they're talking to the market, it's definitely right now Juniper and Cisco. I mean, since HP bought 3Com, that sort of gave them a data center networking story with the H3C product line. But they haven't really done much to sort of communicate that to the market. I mean, H3C had a lot of a lot of buzz about it in China, but they haven't really done a lot to sort of bring that success story that product line had in China to America and talk about what they're doing. I feel I'm still kind of waiting for them to sort of articulate their vision all around 3Com purchase. You know, whether it's the wireless LAN story, because I feel like they're still sort of moving it forward in with both the wireless technology they acquired with 3Com and the smaller purchase they did with Colubris. I hope I'm not breaking any embargoes here, but I mean they're announcing some access points this week that are based on as far as I can tell, the Colubris technology, which I think is interesting. But they haven't done much about the data center network since they bought 3Com. I went to their big show last year, and they were focused mostly on that flex fabric stuff that they're doing in the rack, which is, I think, if I remember correctly, coming mostly out of the server and storage side of the business and not from networking. There wasn't a lot of talk about networks. They presented us with customers that were evaluating the H3C stuff to put in their data centers, but they hadn't even committed yet.
I get the view that the server people are still ascendant. So inside the politics of HP, the server people have got more pull or you know, grunt. And so HP is throwing more resources into that bloody flex fabric idiocy instead of getting on with building decent networking technology that makes flex fabric redundant. And it's almost like, and you can sort of see that HP doesn't want to leave anything behind. The sheer fact that when they bought 3Com and they've actually said, we're keeping ProCurve, not changing any of that. Doesn't matter that it overlaps 50% of our product sets in, you know, a half a dozen markets. We're going to keep that, and we're going to add HP 3Com on top. And you just sit there and go, that doesn't make any business sense at all. How can you support that many different products?
That takes me right back to the wireless stuff. They said that they're on a path to fully integrate what they're doing with 3Com and with Colubris purchases, I haven't seen any delivery on that promise just yet. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
It's a big company.
It is a big company, but I sort of feel that the networking acquisition either hasn't been fully brought in, and maybe HP only wants to take medium to large enterprises, small, medium, large enterprises, and. Whereas I perceive that Cisco and Juniper think that the battlefield is actually in cloud. So this QFabric product is probably not for medium-sized enterprises with, say, less than 2,000 virtual servers. Although potentially it would
fit. They talked about that during their webcast, Juniper did. They're talking about a data center with 5,000 servers being, that seemed like the sweet spot. Yep. But they also took a moment, I can't remember if they did it on the webcast or if they did it when I was talking to them one-on-one. They talked about the idea that it could serve a 1,500 server data center as well, which is still pretty big.
That's big. So what I'm perceiving here is that what Juniper's target market here is actually carriers who think that. There seems to be a bit of a fashion trend going around at the moment where the big worldwide carriers think they'll be able to provide a virtual desktop with every internet line. And I think you'll see in about 3 months' time a sudden outburst of clouds being built by Verizon and British Telecom and, you know, Telstra in Australia and all that. And they're going to say, with every internet connection for only $30 a month, you can have a computer. We'll deliver the broadband router and a keyboard and a screen, and it'll connect to our virtual desktop back in the data center, and it'll be safe as houses.
Really?
Yeah. That's the next wave of virtualization. When I had a briefing from Cisco recently, there was only one word on their lips, and that was $100 million deals with carriers. And it took me a little while to puzzle that out, and I realize now what was happening is if you're Cisco and you're trying to make your cloud computing strategy win a headline, where do you want to go? You want to go for a couple of big deals with Verizon, and your numbers are done for the year, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, T-Mobile, yeah. Whatever. Apple's already won. You know, Cisco's CS tablet strategy is dead. Apple's just wiped them off the floor with it. So Cisco's got to find another opportunity for growth, and I think they see it as UCS. With, you know, carrier class, massive grade data centers, with service providers who are too stupid to learn from what Google and Facebook have done, which is to not buy Cisco kit.
I was just going to say, I mean, listening to you say that, I mean, that my first question is, what happens to all the Cisco customers that aren't, served by that model?
What does Cisco care? They're already losing space. They're already losing share.
They're losing share, but they still own the market. I mean, are those guys all going to have to go to HP or Brocade or
Brocade? Who? Sorry,
they got to go to somebody.
They got to go to somebody. I think there's no reason to believe that, you know, while Cisco's attention shifts to taking an extra $1 billion in shifting assets into carriers all around the world, that they might take their eye off the ball. They've already proven they can take their eye off the ball while they go off and fiddle over here with Yumi and Flipshare and, you know, Scientific Atlantis and all that sort of stuff, which is, you know, sure, they're doing good. They're growing the business in those markets or getting significant revenue from them at least. They're not. I don't get the vision that they're too worried about that core business. They're happy with 85% profit margins, and if it doesn't grow, that's fine while they go off here and do something else.
I will say that this week I was the first week I saw my first ever email from Cisco touting market share. I got an email from someone at Cisco talking about their wireless LAN market share growth, and in all my years of covering them, they'd never really bothered pointing that sort of data out to me before. So that says something.
So let's move on to this week. We had Tom Gillis, the Vice President of Security, deliver his so-called SecureX strategy. I recently sat through the video presentation and came out the other end full of buzzwords, jingoisms, and happy thoughts, but no idea on what the actual execution looks like. Is that just me?
I don't know. Seamus, this is what, maybe their third or fourth iteration of their security strategy?
Yes.
Their overall strategy?
I mean, this time there was less than a year. But they've been pushing the borderless network strategy, which touches on security, but was not really about security, even though they sort of use the most recent Borderless Networks announcement to serve as a platform for them to talk about their overall security strategy. This seemed to be more a focusing of that. But yeah, that there have been a lot of products have gone end of life because they just haven't performed as well as Cisco had wanted, or customers are finding them too difficult to work with. And I mean, this was definitely a strategy. There wasn't a lot of it. Kind of reminded me of your typical vendor vision announcement, where there aren't a lot of products specifically talked about. Just you know, what their goals are. I mean, I definitely saw interesting things in there. I mean, they've recently improved, you know, the top line of their adaptive security appliance product series to be able to deliver on some of the services that they are going to be providing through this SecureX strategy. So,
yeah, but I mean, the new ASA firewalls are a response to the fact that they deep six their FWSM. 2 years ago, the premier go-to-market strategy for high-end firewalling services was the firewall services module in the 6500.
Yeah.
And it's taken them this long. You know, there were several key features scheduled to come into the FWSM that just fell along the wayside. And at the same time, it's almost as if the security division's been restructured four times in the last year. We had the borderless network strategy, and now we've got the SecureX strategy. Along the way, we've seen several products fail. Some of them have actually been thrown out the door unceremoniously. Others are being obviously downscaled, like, for example, NAC. You know, NAC 2 years ago was the holy grail of the future of security, and now it's what? What? Who? How?
Yeah.
We've got the CSMARS, which was security, you know, saying it's just about managing logs. We'll get a partner to do that. It's almost as like I sat down across the table from Tom Gillis in a recent thing, and he said, you know, well, we have a strategy which is buy, build, or partner. And I thought, you know, that's fantastic, because there's only three choices you've got: buy, build, or partner. So it's not exactly a strategy. It's like a statement of the only three choices that you've got. It's like state the bloody obvious. So,
yeah,
you know, either they're going to go out and buy a product from somebody. So they bought Ironport, and they bought Trend Micro. Who did they buy? Sophos, or one of the web companies of some sort?
Oh,
based in London.
The names escape me.
Yeah, anyway, they went out and bought that, you know, so they didn't build it. The ASA product is a leftover of the previous generation of research and development. Threw the CSMARS out. Cisco security managers had a little bit of a tightening up to come to version 4, which was supposed to solve all of the IDS management problems, but it's still. And SecureX is saying, you know, well, IDS is kind of over, and firewalls are kind of over, and we've got a distributed strategy coming real soon now. That was the message I got. But we're not telling you how we're going to deliver it.
Yeah. Cisco's always struggled with integrating in not only software, you know, primarily software acquisitions, but security acquisitions. I mean, they've gone through a bunch of stuff and tossed them to the side. You know, there was they bought VPN vendor, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. They bought Okina, which made their Cisco security agent. They've had a real hard time just executing on bringing this stuff into the Cisco fold and making it work. You know, and this is an area in particular, having this big unified security vision and executing on it, that actually Juniper is doing a really good job with. They haven't gotten all their security products over to, you know, port it over to JunOS like they keep saying they have. You know, they kind of hem and haw when you bring up specific product sets like that they're centered around, like their IDP product line and their NetScreen firewalls. Juniper's really done a very good job of bringing together user identity, which is what's, you know, all the stuff that SecureX is doing. Mm-hmm. User identity, location, access methods, you know, all of this stuff into a unified whole. And you know, it's actually pretty promising from an execution standpoint. They're doing it,
and they're going at a good pace, and they're not making any unexpected moves. If they say they're going to do something, they move into that space, gradually and progressively, and make good ground. And they're becoming quite a compared to Cisco, sort of waffling around and, you know, changing this and changing that and moving into new spaces. Juniper's starting to look stable and progressive. You know, and a trusted partner. So we all agree with that one then, obviously.
Fair enough. Yes.
Okay. One other issue we brought up here is that Huawei and Symantec have gotten together to announce a storage partnership with Force 10. I don't know much about this one, so jump in.
I don't know much about it either, although it's, I think I brought this one up too. Do my homework. What I found interesting about that was not so much the storage partnership, but the partnering with Force 10. I mean, there's only, what, three standalone switch vendors out there right now? Force 10, Extreme, and Arista. You know, there are only so many suitors available. So seeing this partnership with Force 10, I think, is kind of good for Force 10. They're another kind of low-key company you don't hear much about.
I had a great presentation from Force 10 at a Tech Field Day recently, and you can see that their products have some real capabilities, but the company seems to be lacking something, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was. I'd be more than happy to use their gear, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a, you know, it's almost as if there's a, you know,
they don't have any momentum into the market.
They need to attack a niche. Like, Arista's moved into low latency.
Well, that was Force 10 space as well. I mean, they were, you know, they were always driving after the HPC market, you know, that kind of stuff. And yeah, now Arista's in there.
But Arista's doing it on the back of their software platform. So not only are they low latency and, you know, all that happy goodness, they've also got a software platform which offers some very interesting features for highly customized backbones where that flexibility is desirable for the trading floors. But the Huawei Symantec thing is a storage run, isn't it? It's a storage deal. All right, let's wrap that and race it off to the presses, or press submit or something. That's it for the show. If you got this far, thanks for listening. Remember to hit up packetpushers.net website and ask questions and provide feedback. I'd like to thank Mike Fratto for joining the show this week. Mike, what's up with you?
Thanks, Greg. We're just the royal we. I'm just getting ready to go to Cloud Connect next week in Santa Clara. That'll be fun. So look for my tweets, M. Fratto on Twitter, and I'll be blogging at networkingcompany.com.
Brilliant. And thanks for coming on again, Seamus. Tell us what's happening with you.
Thanks, Greg. I'm writing a few stories that I'll probably refrain from talking about, so I don't tip my hand. But I'm looking at network gear that's managed through the cloud, which is kind of something that's out there on the edge of things. But there's some vendors doing some interesting things, so I'm focusing on that right now.
Brilliant. That sounds entertaining. And, of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter as at etherealmind. Of course, you can follow Packet Pushers on the Twitter as well, and you can also find us on Facebook. Look forward to the next show coming out in a week or so. Thanks for listening, and remember...
And that's it from Packet Pushers. And remember, too much networking will never be enough.